Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super J Cast. I'm Joel, and joined by Damon McDonald. It is Wednesday, 8th of July, 2026. This is episode 416. I've got the MacBook fixed. We're back on the YouTubes. You're all excited and ready to go to Chicago. No World Cup football today. It's full attention, full steam ahead for the Grade 1 climax. How are we feeling?
Let's go. Let's do it. Yeah, feeling pretty good. Again, I'm not the best flyer, but... between me and you, Joel, first class takes care of that pretty easily.
You fancy man.
It wasn't that much more expensive. A little bit more expensive. And then I got the club access. So I'll be doing fucking old fashions at 6 o'clock in the morning. Zanny. Just to kind of ease me into the flight situation, because you know me, not the best flyer, but I'm excited. All the plans are lined up, all the itinerary is set, the weather looks to be cooperating with us. I was a little worried because I was a little worried about, you know, getting together on Friday night. If you're a $10 tier subscriber and going to the show, you would have all those details. And also, I'll send you, Joel, just some finalized stuff just so everybody is good. So we're looking forward to that. And then Saturday, we have afternoon plans with a lot of the Voices of Wrestling gang and others. And then right off to the show. So in which we'll be enjoying a suite. I think we got two suites. Did I read correctly? So lots of people, lots of fun. I'm excited for the show. I wish you were there, Joel. But hopefully for the people who cannot be in attendance, I'm in a shocking move. I'm doing video content. There will be a daily vlogs. And again, if you can't make it, if you're a $10 tier subscriber, you'll have access to those. So,
there's no if, right? Every single person who is listening to this show now, if you're not on the $10 tier, you need to do that now, right? Now is the perfect time to be jumping on, and there are no excuses not to do it.
It really isn't. Right?
We are on the doorstep of G1 Climax. So, not only are you going to be getting all the stuff that the $10 subscribers usually get, which is live streaming on YouTube of the Super J-Cast every week, now that my laptop has been repaired. Bonus shows coming out of my ass.
My ass too.
Great show I just uploaded recently, me reviewing the New Japan DDT crossover show with Odd Jobs. That's a great listen. All and right. just constantly there's bonus audio coming out, me and you talking to interesting people. You get access to the deli, where there is regular breaking news that no one else has access to. Even earlier today, there was an exclusive going up about a member of the New Japan roster who is departing the company. And you know, you're not going to find that elsewhere. You're going to get access to the vault, which for any New Japan fan and appreciator of New Japan history, that is an absolute must. And you will be getting daily Grade 1 Climax audio.
That's correct.
From myself, from you, Damon. We're going to be reviewing the shows as and when they happen with red hot, instant, fresh takes on the show. None of this business, you got to wait for the weekly podcast drop and we're going to talk about a show that happened 6 days ago that nobody cares about. No, you're going to hear daily. Soon as the show's finished, we're going to be on the airwaves, not live, but it will be uploaded in a timely manner. And you're going to be hearing our reactions and our honest and insightful analysis about the shows and how the storylines are unfolding. And I think even if I say so myself, I did an outstanding job with that last year. And with you sharing the load, it's going to be even better. Plus all the bonus stuff you're going to be doing from your trip to Chicago. Like, what more could you possibly want? Like I said, there is no excuse for not getting on that $10 tier now. Just give it a try. If you don't like it, you just cancel at the end of the month. That's fine. Yeah. We'd be okay with that. Just give it a try because you will love it.
I think so. And again, for 10 measly dollars, again, I like to say I don't like to spend people's money, but for 10 measly dollars, all of that and more. So, again, I can't see why not. But, you know, the world's a wacky place. And I think if you're a $5 tier, it's worth the upgrade. If you, again, were thinking about it, hemming and hauling, now's a great time to get in. Because, again, just as Joel described, especially the deli, we had some breaking news that no one else had but us. And, so get on that. 10 measly dollars. And, again, if you think it stinks, just cancel and be like, fuck that, I'm out. I don't think you will. I think you'll enjoy it.
I'll tell you what, though. It's going to be a very busy day on Saturday. Is it Saturday when the G1 show is?
Correct, yes.
Because also on Saturday, we've got some tasty FIFA World Cup quarterfinals to look forward to. Much has happened, Damon, since we last spoke in the World Cup.
So, just as an FYI, I subscribed to YouTube TV. So with that, I'll be able to watch it live, if necessary, on my phone, or tablet device. I'm hoping there's a TV somewhere around in that arena. But if not, I'll be set because if the show stinks, my attention span's going right there.
Yes, a lot has happened in the last week of World Cup action. And I know you're not a particularly diehard football fan, but what events from the World Cup have kind of permeated your own sphere of awareness? Go on.
Yep. If the door's for me, I'm not here. All right. First of all, I heard the banging. Was there somebody at the door?
It's my wife. You know, she doesn't give a fuck that I'm recording. She's absolutely no respect for what we're doing here. But I've given up trying to nag her about it.
Does she understand what we do and how we do it and how there's extra income coming in?
She likes that part. She likes spending the money, but the bit about being quiet while I'm recording, not so keen on that one.
Okay. All right. Well, World Cup. So first, I have to address the elephant in the room. And I cannot believe you would talk about FIFA very negatively. I kind of formed my attitude with FIFA with that. And again, just the shit that I have read in the past about that. The fact that there was even a discussion outside of the realm of the FIFA Board of Governors that someone, a politician from the United States, had to get involved, and then the decision was swayed. That is just vomit-inducing. Like, could you imagine, like, in any other sport, I'm just like, what the fuck is happening? Help me out. Because, Joel, correct me if I'm wrong, there are no grounds for a review, right? You can't review the red card. And they made a special case, and then the dude wound up playing, and they got blown out anyway. But what the fuck was that all about? Exactly. My thoughts exactly. Dead silence. I think he's taking
Sorry, the YouTube subscribers have heard me shouting at Esther there because she's just come up and we've got a coffin. I've always said that FIFA's bent, but now they keep sinking to new lows.
It's unbelievable.
And it's unbelievable. There's no bottom to this thing. Like, it's rigged. And at least there was some sort of plausible sort of suspension of disbelief that there was some kind of sporting merit involved. But now that is just completely off the table here. And the fact that Donnie Trump can call up his mate Gianni Infantino and get that suspension, not even overturned. It wasn't even like, oh, can you take another look at this? We don't think it's a red card, which even in and of itself would
be
totally unacceptable. But they still, not only did they, it wasn't that they overturned it, they just postponed the suspension. So they're like, no, we still think it's a red card. We still agree with that. And he's still going to have a suspension, but it's going to be later. So he can play in this World Cup match, which to be fair, like they did before, they did for Ronaldo. He was supposed to be having a ban, but they postponed that so he could play in some of the World Cup games. So I never thought I would be kind of clamoring for the return of the previous president of FIFA, Sepp Blatter, who, you know, has had like literal books written about how corrupt he is. But even he was critical of what's going on. And when he's the voice of reason in the room saying, lads, this is getting a bit silly now. You need to take a long, hard look at yourself. It's just, there's no bottom to this thing, Damon. And I just very curious to see if there are any repercussions to this, if this actually gets dealt with at all, if Infantino becomes answerable for this, or if it just gets swept under the carpet and things keep going. And I suspect it's going to be the latter, but yeah. I would say, I think it, if anything, it damaged the USA's chances in that game, because all the attention and hype for the game was on Trump and Infantino, and it felt like Flo Balogun. It wasn't really about him at all. It was like kind of immaterial who the player was that involved. It was more the process that had gone behind it. And I think it made the USA into a bit of a laughingstock. I think it fired up the Belgian team, who were not that good, right? Let's be honest here. They've been pretty poor this tournament, but they were fired up by it and they just absolutely tore the USA to shreds. So the whole thing was just an absolute disaster class. And I was going to say, like, it had been a really great tournament, a lot of exciting matches, good comebacks, and kind of almost sort of by accident was becoming a bit of a PR win for the USA, you know, hosting a tournament like this with such great football going on. And it seemed like, oh, maybe the legacy for this thing is going to be a positive one. People will look fondly on this World Cup and have great memories of all the action and all the, you know, superstar players firing on all cylinders and great stories and comebacks and everything. But just Trump instantly making it all about himself and Infantino with his groveling sycophancy, just exposing the whole thing to be an absolute sham. And now that's caused fans to be questioning everything that happens now, like that Egypt Argentina game, a few dodgy decisions there and a perfectly fine looking goal from my point of view. Egypt's having chalked off for a very minor infraction that happened about 12 minutes before the goal was actually scored. And now people are sort of thinking, well, where's the bottom of this? You know, how much of this is fixed? Is this just like the football version of WWE? Has this been predetermined? You know, it's now very obvious that significant parties have got their fingers on the scales here, which definitely affects my enjoyment of watching it. You know, I would love to see England go and knock out Argentina after all that, but we got to get past Norway first, which is not a given. But it's a shame. You know, I thought our win against Mexico at the Azteca Stadium was just fantastic. What a tremendous event and a really iconic performance, iconic result for English football that I think is going to be looked back on for many, many years with pride, and rightly so. But then, you know, like 24 hours later, then it's just suddenly yesterday's news, because Donald Trump needs to be the main character of everything.
Whatever your political beliefs are, okay, I'm even willing to say, all right, put it aside and we're talking about the sport and whatever. But like, I could you imagine this occurring in baseball, in American football, in hockey, in anything? Calling up Gary Bettman, I would like you to overturn that goal. Like, what? What are you talking about?
It's like a WWE Raw heel general manager storyline,
right,
isn't it?
Right. It really is. Oh, my God. Like that really took me out of shit. Because here's the thing, and I think it took a lot of people out of it, in the sense of, look, you know as well as I do, football is not the sport it is here that it is in other countries. So it's always been, you know, every 4 years, everybody's like, oh, is this where it turns the corner in the United States? And every year it does grow, but nowhere near where it should be. Like that kind of shit, though, makes you just be like, okay, whatever. Again, everybody talks about, oh, they dive and, you know, all the acting and, oh, I'm hurt. I broke my shin and, you know, all that stuff, which never goes over well. But I think people can like appreciate the art form that it is, especially now when you're getting the best of the best and games that, you know, you have a little patriotism, little pride. And then that happens. And it's like, what the fuck? Why am I even watching this? Because you're right. It's like, I don't trust anything at this point. Like, what is there to trust? So, oh, well. But the action itself, yeah, it's been fun. It's games every afternoon. There's, you know, you could pop on and you don't have to have a rooting interest. But they're exciting. And I don't know, as the game goes on, you kind of do get a rooting interest. And, you know, listen, I'm rooting for you again. Once again, living through all of my British friends. And let's go. Let's. I mean, here's the thing, too. With the Argentina thing, it's kind of like. So, yeah, I'm rooting for England all the way here. And let's go. Let's do it.
Okay, let's move on to talking about some New Japan news. There was an announcement from Tomoaki Honma, who has said he's going to retire before his home crowd. So he's going to call it a day on, I don't know. It doesn't say. I've opened the news article. It's July 4th, non-televised event in Yamagata started off with Tomoaki Honma greeting his hometown crowd. 29-year veteran who underwent phenomenal blah, 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 blah. Has taken the decision to retire. He would work to improve his condition enough for a retirement match in his hometown next year, ending his career at 30 years in the business. So he's going to be retiring at some point next year. And it does seem that now that the Tanahashi retirement is out of the way, that's kind of opened the floodgates to quite a few retirements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's be honest here. This probably should have happened a while ago. He, you know, since the injury, he's absolutely a shell of, but you know, at one point, even during the New Japan, I think he's more like, if you're looking for a really interesting body of work, I mean, here's a guy that, you know, with Big Japan, and he did a lot of his stuff there, and then moving on to New Japan, and even like, you know, being the lovable loser, so to speak, had its place, because you were always looking for the big win, and you're always looking for that moment for him. Was he ever like a serious threat to titles? I mean, I don't think he was ever really like anybody was, you know, clamoring for him to win any of the, even the secondary belts. But he definitely had a purpose, and people enjoyed him, and I enjoyed him to a certain degree. The one memory I have of him and will have of him is when I went to Fukuoka for Dontaku, and he was in the lobby signing stuff. And I had a t-shirt, or maybe I bought the t-shirt and you got the autograph, but I couldn't understand that he wanted me to hold the t-shirt and stretch it out. Right, so he could sign it. I just put it on the table, so he's expecting me to hold it so he can do it. There was a little miscommunication there, but yeah, it's you know, I don't know what the plan, I don't know what the retirement tour might look like, but hopefully it's somewhat limited, and I'm gathering a shit ton of multi-man tags we'll have for at least, you know, 6 months going into the new year.
So let's talk about the show that took place on Monday, July the 6th, Rota G1 Climax in Korakuen Hall, with very healthy attendance of 1,483. Let's get to the highlights here. Second match was the Oleg Bolton comeback match, which is kind of notable in and of itself that they felt that was worthy of having that moniker, you know, that this is the old Oleg Bolton comeback match. Like, you know, he's not been out that long. And right, the fact that they gave it, I know it's like an 8-man tag match, second on the card at Korakuen Hall, but not for nothing, as you would say. There was you know, a little bit of fanfare here. And it was a really good match, actually. It went 8 minutes and it was some really interesting pairings. We got to see Goto and Yuto Ice and Aaron Wolf going off against Yota Tsuji, and Shingo was there as well. So, you know, quite a few big names in there, and Daiki Nagai as well. So I thought one thing that stood out to me here was just seeing Aaron Wolf working wrestlers who are not in House of Torture. It was just like a breath of fresh air, right? Seeing him having sequences in the ring with Yota Tsuji. And I just, like the realization washed over me, like, oh my God, I'm going to get to see Aaron Wolf wrestling loads of different wrestlers who are not in House of Torture. And I just felt really happy for about 30 seconds there. But yeah, Oleg Bolton got the win here, pinned Daiki Nagai. And yeah, I'm kind of expecting him to have a bit of a run here in the G1 climax. Are you with me on that?
Kind of, sort of. Yeah, I mean, I like this G1 feels. I know Chris Samsa has his pick'em contest once again. I forget what's the. Give me the website if
it's
you get a chance.
Sportsofprowrestling.com.
There you go. I got to do mine probably tonight or early tomorrow. I'll get mine in the nick of time and fail miserably as I do every fucking year, but. The match itself was like, it was a G1 appetizer. And you got to, like to see it on paper is one thing, but you got to see little tastes of it in the ring. And I had very similar thoughts to you of, wow, we're going to see, you know, Oleg Bolton, Bolton Oleg, in the mix with a bunch of different people. We talk about Aaron Wolf. There's a lot of people that it's interesting to see what this will be, you know, what will be the end result, not necessarily like who's winning, but like performance wise and, you know, are they ready for next steps? And is this a guy we can lean on and all that kind of stuff that's what's fascinating to me with this particular G1. And Aaron Wolf is in there as well. Is he going to win more than he's going to lose? Well, on the one hand, it's his first one. So if we're looking at any type of traditional booking patterns by New Japan Pro Wrestling, you would kind of think he would be losing more than he's winning. That said, he's an established singles guy with a secondary belt. He's not going to lose that often. So it's kind of like what you got to pick your spots. Like where do you see like him losing? You know, you're figuring, okay, we're setting up for potential title defenses and stuff like that. Like you know, who's getting the wins and who's getting the losses. So, you know, for him specifically, it's such an interesting thing to me. And again, over and above the fact that we're getting to watch him in the ring, singles matches, for a month like that, I my pants are down. I'm fucking ready. Let's go. Let's see what everyone's got. And that goes across the board. How is, and again, I know we're going to talk about this in a second. So bear with me. But again, I think about guys like Hanari coming back from an injury, Oleg Bolton, Aaron Wolf. Oiwa.
Yuta Ice,
Oscar, like all these people that like people might easily be like, oh, well, where are the stars and where is it, whatever. Like, I love the fact that it feels so wide open. Like, that's exciting to me. Without the idea of, okay, these guys that are stars have to get surprise losses or stuff like that. Like, it's 50, it's like who it's evenly matched. That's where my excitement lies, and then that falls squarely on like Aaron Wolf's shoulders. Like he, it starts with him, and it goes throughout the whole fucking tournament.
Yeah, I think just taking a step back and something I've talked about a lot on this show over the years, sort of especially when we were kind of in the pandemic era, was the problem New Japan had with failing to restock the shelf with homegrown domestic heavyweights. But now, seeing that they've got homegrown guys like Yota Tsuji, they've got Oiwa, they've got Yuto Ice, Great Okan. I mean, I know he's crap, but he's still a homegrown heavyweight. We've got Shota Umino. We've got Yuya Uemura. Again, mileage may vary, but Ren Narita, he is a homegrown heavyweight. We've got Aaron Wolf as well. I don't know whether you technically class him in that category, but he's certainly a Japanese heavyweight at least. And they've got Konosuke Takeshita now. Like, I think they've done a really good job in sort of restocking that so that they do have a kind of healthy lineup of Japanese heavyweights there, which I think they were struggling with for a while there. So it's just exciting that this is a tournament where it feels wide open, in as much as you don't have guys who are like the clear standout stars, and it feels like a big opportunity for guys to make a name for themselves. Even if they might not be booked to win the whole thing, there's going to be certainly a lot of eyeballs on the Chicago show for people to get themselves over, and I think a real big opportunity for people to stake their claim to be the next guy up in the division. So there's certainly a lot to be excited about there. And again, just seeing little glimpses of that in this seemingly throwaway 8-man tag match second on the card. I just got a lot of excitement watching that, which is very, very cool.
It is. And here's the thing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to move on to the next match, but you extend that thought.
Yeah, just one point. I just wanted to, like, a good, let me do, a great G1 will make a star. You know, like if any of those guys that you mentioned can put together a tournament that is just like really sexy, that you elevate yourself in the eyes of people. Like, people will take you seriously. You will be a star. Like, if you go out there and bust your fucking ass for a month, this is a thing that can make your career. I mean, just go back, 2016, I think it was, or 17, and again, I'm not comparing these two to anybody on this roster, but, a lot of people got into New Japan Pro Wrestling with Shibata and Ishii, and it's not like they were household names before that G1 match, but afterward, that got a lot of fucking buzz and a lot of views and a lot of people kind of like, oh, let me check this shit out. I have something I can sink my teeth into. Like, if you could be one of those guys that, again, I, that match was great. I got to see what he does with this guy. This can make people's careers. People that you think, they don't got it, they don't have it. Like, this could do it. So, again, I know we're talking a lot about G1 right now, but I'm pumped.
Burning Hammer says, was putting Wolf in the G1 ahead of Yoshihashi one of the worst decisions in terms of potential match quality for the tournament? I strongly disagree with that. I think we've not... Actually, I'm going to go one step further.
It's fair.
I think I have seen enough from Aaron Wolf so far for me not to be fearful about his inclusion in the G1. I think we're going to get some really good, really memorable matches there. And we all love Yoshihashi. I get that. And he is a really good performer. But I don't want to kind of retroactively make him into some sort of wrestling god just because he's had some good performances during the pandemic and was good with the 6-man title and had a nice tag run. And occasionally when he gets a tap on the shoulder, he can fire up and put on a good match. I don't think it's a significant downgrade in terms of match quality, if at all. I mean, that could be a take by the time this G1 climax is finished. We might be looking back and thinking, wow, Aaron Wolf, what a breakout star he looks like. So, yeah, I think that's I don't know. I personally don't agree with that one.
I mean, I can see the point of, okay, you have a guaranteed handful, probably more than that. If you put Yoshihashi in that spot, you could probably get some really good matches. The problem is this, is that just like we've said before, we have to give guys a chance, number one. So we don't know if he can have a great, G1. This is his first one. He's got to have one. And I'm willing to take that chance. I really am. And I'll go so far as to say the idea of the potential of Aaron Wolf versus what we think the bar is in Yoshihashi, I think Aaron Wolf can get either damn close or exceed. Again, we're talking about two different styles, mind you. But let's I want it to work. It needs to work. It has to work because there's so much invested in it. So, yeah, I mean, I understand the thought process of just from a pure match quality perspective. I can see where you can make that argument. But I'm pretty confident that we'll be talking about Aaron Wolf at the end of this G1 and saying, oh, we have a blue chipper. And if we don't, then, you know, we figure out where we go from here.
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of doing a bit of guesswork at the moment, really, because we don't have a huge amount of data to go on, right? There's not the evidence and the pool of matches there for us to look at and analyze that. He's had a handful of matches against House of Torture guys. So it's difficult from that to extrapolate and make any bold predictions about what his tournament's going to look like. But I'm going to choose to err on the side of optimism. I think it's going to be
wild optimism.
A really good, yes, wild optimism. I think he's going to be the greatest wrestler. He's going to be the second coming of Kurt Angle. And it's going to be really great. Yeah.
Shinya Hashimoto reborn. Okay.
The third match was a Tiger Mask final three-way tornado tag match where we had Dick Togo and Yoshinobu Kanemaru defeating Gedo and Taiji Ishimori and Jado and Tiger Mask 6 minutes, 26 seconds. Kanemaru got the pin over Tiger Mask Samson Clutch. putting over the young talent on his way out. This was a lot of fun. This was just like, yeah, it's, I don't know if you have these in the USA where you get multi-packs of crisps and there's all different flavors. You know, you get like two ready salted, two salt and vinegar, two cheese. I mean, this was like a variety pack of like your grizzled uncle wrestlers in all different flavors. So you had like grumpy flavor, a dastardly cheetah flavor, lovable cheetah flavor, drunk cheetah flavor, bald flavor, just like, yeah, a little smorgasbord of different flavors of grumpy uncles. It was fun. I like these kind of matches.
Me too. And for all our giggling, you know, under our breath about Tiger Mask and all that stuff, I thought this week was pretty good for him. You know what I mean? Like he went out and shined. I just love the idea of them. They always do that. You know, the guy going out the door, he's lying down. And you would think it would be the opposite. You know, you want everybody to get that, you know, I don't know, final big cheer, big pop, I guess, for getting away. But they never do. Love it. And again, from a wrestling standpoint, I guess you could make the argument of, well, yeah, he's going out the door. He's putting people over. But okay. But all right, there's somebody in that match that really needs that kind of push or, you know, kind of rub, so to speak. So, fun little match. You know what I mean? It was a reason to smile.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll come on to the Tiger Mask retirement match itself, but I mean, spoiler alert, he won.
Right.
So one of the rare occasions of an outgoing wrestler actually winning in his final match. But it's just extremely funny to me that he was taking a loss on his way out in one of his final two matches. Like, no, I want to go out, do things the right way, play it forward. I'm going to go out on my back and put someone else over. Like, oh, okay. So which young and up and coming star are you going to put over on your way out? Kanemaru.
Right, 50-year-old Kanemaru. Right. I know. But, and here's the thing too, only because you mentioned it and we'll get to it obviously in a moment. But I mean, the reason why Tiger Mask won is because his opponent wasn't a New Japan guy. That's really it. If it was anybody else in that ring, he would have lied down. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Well, we're opening a bit of a can of worms there in terms of discussing guest AEW wrestlers parachuting in for retirement matches and whether or not they're doing the job as part of that. But yeah, we'll come on to that. The fourth match was the G1 Climax B Block Player match with Oscar defeating Yujiro Takahashi 9 minutes, 54 seconds via KOB, which is a tag team move. You will note.
Right.
This was fine. I said it before. I really hope we're not going to get an entire tour of big man gets leg worked over and fights from below. Right. And I'm not saying that Oscar is bad at it. I think he is already better at all of that stuff than Hikuleo ever was. But I just wish the company had the guts to book a big man like a monster and not just like a vulnerable tall person, you know, like New Japan, just they won't ever speed run that. You only get the monster booking if you either do your time, like let's say Henare has managed to get to something resembling that spot. And I'd say either that or you come from outside of the company as an established commodity, like, you know, like a Jonah Rock. When he came in, he was just immediately, oh, he's a monster. And I get why this match was worked this way, because obviously Yujiro has very little credibility as a singles wrestler, and he was used here as a vehicle for House of Torture and to build up excitement to Oscar's singles match with Ren in Chicago. And look, Oscar doesn't have the record as a singles guy either. So this essentially degenerated into like a 2-on-5 handicap tag match, which is is fine for what it was. You know, I'm not saying I was desperate to go and see the purity of grappling between Oscar and Yujiro Takahashi with no infractions whatsoever. But my issue is that I do think that there is potential with Oscar as a singles worker. And I think he's got the right instincts to be a monster, but just, we know this company, they won't book him like one in a singles capacity unless he proves himself over, like, you know, the next 8 years or so. So I do feel we're staring down the barrel of 9 Oscar matches of, ouchie, my long legs are being damaged, which for me personally is going to wear thin after about night 3, but there you go. Welcome to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
All right, we got to chop down the giant, Joel. I thought the match was decent. Again, you're not getting a ton of Oscar singles matches. So, they kind of, I don't want to say took the easy way out, but they, you know, they did the thing I think everyone would have expected. And you're right. It did turn into a 2-on-5 at certain points. The thing that I kind of was like, who was the most over guy in that match?
Yuto.
Thank you very much. Right. And the finish was, I mean, it was Yuta Ice. Who did everything. Cleaned house, set up for the, you know, the finishing move. Yeah. And the only thing he did do was cover.
Might have been a nice time to establish that Oscar does have some ability as a singles wrestler, and to say, like, hey, look, this guy does deserve to be in the tournament and can win matches by itself, but no, it's not what they did here.
Yeah, I did that. That was my only, like, really? Come on, the guy's good. If, you know, if he's going to win the match and get into G1, let's not make it give him a definitive win. Get people pumped up to see him. You know, it's fucking Yujiro, for crying out loud. What are we doing?
Got to protect Yujiro.
Right. The guy wrestles, what, in 3 singles matches a year, if that. So, all right. But yeah, to me, it felt like, oh, here comes the fucking meat and potatoes of this team, and he's going to clean it up. And he did. And all Oscar had to do was roll over and fucking count the 3.
So the 5th match was the G1 Climax A Block playing match, where we had Ryohei Oiwa defeating El Fantasmo in 9 minutes 36 seconds via the grip. And I quite enjoyed this. I thought it was a competitive, but ultimately, I would say fairly comprehensive win for Oiwa. I don't think there were really any particularly close near falls for ELP. I feel that Oiwa essentially just manhandled him and put him away with relative comfort. And I liked what Oiwa did here. I think he really uses his bulk in a way that not many guys in his cohort do. You know, he lays it in thick, as he should for a guy of his size. He's, you know, big, thick, burly, muscular dude. And I wish more people would wrestle to their strengths there. And I thought El Fantasmo was a very generous, very willing opponent who bumped a lot and made Oiwa look like a big, tough, beefy boy. I thought it was a fine opponent. He understood the assignment. I'm not particularly surprised by that. That was probably the one match of the 4 play-ins where there might have been a bit of doubt, but I was always kind of 90% confident that Oiwa would be in. So that's nice. That's good. There is a conversation to be had here about El Fantasma, because he made some very cryptic comments backstage about all the 7 years that he spent with the company and it's come to this. And he said that he'd explain more tomorrow, the following day, but he wasn't booked on that. He wasn't booked on that show, so we didn't get to hear what he had on his mind there. But a lot of question marks arising from this and what El Fantasmo said, or rather, what he didn't say. I mean, I do think if we're sort of analyzing his New Japan performances over the last 2 years, I feel he has significantly slowed down. And that's not a criticism. It's just an observation. Obviously, there have been mitigating health factors for him. And certainly, if he were to continue with New Japan, I would see his role personally as an enhancement guy for the younger wrestlers at this point. But possibly there might be other paths in his future. We don't know, Damon. What do you think about this match and Oiwa and El Fantasma?
Yeah. Again, we were talking about it, if not last week, the week before, prior, about how we've kind of felt like, this might be an opportunity for ELP to sit one out, could he take the grind of the G1? And quite honestly, we need to create stars once again, hammering that point home. And I think the right guy needed to win and did, and convincingly. When you talk about the health of a pro wrestler and the idea that your career has a certain length. Now, there are guys that, have found ways to extend their career more than the average. Let's put it that way. your Flairs, your Funks, your whomever, right? Your Takers, your Maccabees, your whatever. You've made a career, you've made a name for yourself, and you've afforded yourself the luxury of being with the company, maybe past your welcome. I mean, it's debatable for all the people that we mentioned. But in a case of like ELP, what does 10 years look like? Is New Japan that willing to set you up financially for those next 10 years? Again, I think we all can assume that the clock is ticking on ELP's career. That said, he is sitting this G1 out, and if he does feel the clock is ticking as well, G1 might not be the best idea for him. So, look, all I know is if you got $10, you might as well spend it now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to speak too much on this until we actually have some verifiable information here. So, I'll hold my tongue for now. Right?
Yeah, we're holding tongues.
We'll discuss that in the future. Sixth match was the IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship with the challenger, Gabe Kidd, successfully defeating the champion Shota Umino, 8:48. Obviously, the match was a lot longer than that because there was a lot of
It was like 20 minutes of outside before the ring bell.
Yes. But honestly, Damon, I thought both guys were outstanding here. I thought this was great. They both deserved their flowers. And I know we've been critical of Gabe Kidd over the last 9 months, and rightly so, I feel, but I thought he was excellent here. He's in tremendous physical shape. The fans are still obviously happy and excited to see him in spite of his extremely heavy-handed heel mannerisms. And I love how he just immediately drop-kicked Marty Azami.
I know.
As the match played out, this walk and brawl and Gabe's interactions with Fat Pussy Tanahashi, who's like an unused character from The Sopranos. The dynamics of the match, I thought, settled really nicely. I thought the crowd were fully behind Shota. I think Shota's much improved at work in the crowd and choosing the right moments to let things breathe and when to sell to elicit sympathy and when to fire up to get the crowd hyped. And Gabe was a brilliant foil for him. And I thought they really brought the heat out of each other. They carried the match with the intensity of a blood feud, which it kind of is, if rumors are to be believed about the history between these two men. They really went hard, like the slap exchange, they were laying it in, and the match turned narratively with a moment I particularly like where Gabe was pretending that his shoulder was hurt again, the same shoulder that out of last year's G1. So that was a nice little callback that I think elicited the perfect response from the crowds, and they just turned on Gabe. They're not, understandably, and that was the turning point, because Gabe just absolutely emptied the tank on Shota. All of his big moves, you know, the pile driver on the floor in front of Tanahashi, and Shota in defeat, I still think he showed his fighting spirit. He kicked out again and again and again out of defiance, and almost on autopilot. And Gabe ultimately coming out on top with a Death Rider, which was a nice bit of symbolism, because obviously there's stuff going on between them, and you figure John Moxley's going to figure into that at some point. So it feels like a piece of a puzzle in a wider storyline arc that they have going for them. And I just thought overall it was a really vicious and heated match that is probably the start of a trilogy. You know, if we know New Japan booking patterns, they're going to meet in the G1 in their block and probably looking at an autumn rubber match. And yeah, I just think both guys knocked out of the park here. And Gabe, I feel he's actually, you know, as much as he presents this larger than life character with his hatred for New Japan and lays it on thick, I almost feel like he's toned things down a bit. I think I feel like he's presenting a darker and more violent and menacing version of the character than the
fucking hooligan. Yeah.
Last year it was just a hooligan. It was just him swearing, and it didn't feel that there was much substance to it. It came across as a bit try hard, but it feels like here he's kind of backing it up with his actions. And, you know, I'm not saying that him slapping Tanahashi and throwing the belt on the floor is particularly nuanced, but it feels a bit more, I don't know, a bit more coherent, a bit more organic than what he was doing before. I really like what he did here. I think he's set up nicely as a dangerous and vindictive rival for Shota to overcome at some point in the future. Honestly, I'm grateful to have another top heel in the company that isn't enticing the booking team to fall back on their usual lazy cheating interference tropes. You know, Gabe, it's kind of bent the rules a bit, and without explicitly cheating, you know, he exploited Shota's sense of mercy by pretending his shoulder was hurt and, you know, tricked the referee. But I wouldn't say it was outright cheating, but, you know, this is a breath of fresh air as compared to having a load of goons jumping in the ring and having ref bumps and weapons used and things like that. So I think it's a nice spot for Gabe. But again, I don't know how long he's sticking around, but I thought he served his purpose really well here. And I thought Shota was excellent too. I think he's looking great. He's gone back to his initial post-excursion look with the, you know, the pink and the tights and the long hair. And let's be honest, that was the best look out of all the iterations he's gone through. He is also in excellent physical condition. I feel he's mostly got the crowd behind him, provided they're not in Osaka, which is an entity unto itself. But I just think in general, Shota looks a lot more comfortable and confident being a top babyface. And it felt to me that this match is a launching point for something big for Shota. I would be really surprised if this is just a little self-contained feud with Gabe that doesn't factor into a larger narrative arc for Shota. Just the timing of this match right before G1, the Forbidden Door match that he had with that showcase win against Pac, it feels very intentional. Right. I feel it's making Shota look and feel like a protagonist heading into the G1. Like, he feels like he's got the most heat and momentum in the field. Like, out of all the 20 guys, I can't think of anyone else who's got this much kind of narrative force driving him kind of emotionally into this tournament than all the other guys. And it feels like coming out of this match, he's got to be one of the early favorites to win the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. At first I was a little surprised, and you did kind of, we in a text exchange, you did make that point. And I was like, yeah, you know what? You are right. They did set that up for, you know, a clear path and a distinct path. Man, they hammered home. They left nothing to chance in establishing one, Gabe as, you know, he is the heeliest heel of them all. And when you trot out Hiroshi Tanahashi, who is the ultimate babyface, going, you know, and Gabe going against the guy that New Japan would love to pick up that mantle of ultimate babyface and kind of, you know, carry that torch further, they did everything in their power to establish that, okay, this Gabe Kidd character is something to be reckoned with and something that you will despise. Again, all that interaction with Hiroshi Tanahashi, by proxy, you know, you're rooting for Shota at that point to fucking kick Gabe's ass. Come on, kick his ass because of the spitting and the physical altercation. And again, the match itself, like people, like it gave people a clear definitive, oh, fuck that guy. He's not a good person. Yeah, they really, I got to give them credit in the sense of they left nothing to chance. Like that was crystal. By the time that match ended and the post match and him tossing around the global title like it was a piece of trash and him, you know, cussing and middle fingers and potty language and everything else, leaving, you know, the next super baby face in a heap of his own blood. Yeah.
There was a bag of puppies under the ring and a bus full of orphans outside the arena that they luckily didn't need to use.
Right. I was about to say, like exactly my thoughts, like aside from, you know, slapping some babies and kicking some puppies, the guy did everything in his fucking power to have the crowd and everyone else hate him. So, yeah, I mean, there was no subtleties there. It was full on, which in a way was refreshing. Like it was clean, clear cut. This guy's a scumbag. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying to get Shota to be the guy people can rally around. And it's taken a lot less organic routes that people poo-pooed and people hand-waved and people were like, no. And I think things like this, again, by proxy, so that, you know, it's oh, what a fucking asshole doing that to the Hiroshi Tanahashi of all. He's the president, and the president's trying to keep his cool. He's getting spit in the face and knocked out. By proxy, you're like, okay, come on, Shota, fucking fire up and beat the shit out of this guy. Pro Wrestling 101. But they went 1,000% in that direction, 100 miles an hour, which, again, felt a little refreshing. Very, I liked it. I thought it was fine.
And the main event was the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match, where the 100th champion, Yo, successfully defended against the challenger, Francesco Acura. 26 very long minutes, 38 seconds. I don't know, David. Like, I might be on an island with this. I felt it was too long. I don't like the matches being this long. Maybe it could just be because I have broken my brain with my phone and I've got the attention span of a bumblebee. But I just got annoyed when the match graphic came up on the screen, just the render of Yo with his big stupid face and he's like oh! Yeah, just right. Pulling a really dark face. I'm like, please, just let me believe for a moment, just for a second, that you're taking this seriously.
But he did.
And I did. Well, come on. It's like 5 minutes into the match, Akira was banging Yo on the head with a silver platter and he was jerking around in a comedic manner that made me think I was still watching the DDT crossover show.
No doubt. But then at toward the end, though, don't you think that like toward the end, I'm like, this might be my favorite Yo match in a fucking long time.
Yeah, it was good. I just don't like him. And that's the disconnect with me. I don't think I will ever be able to take him seriously or really appreciate what he's doing as a serious singles wrestler in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I'm not saying that he is bad or that the booking of him is bad or that him winning this is bad. I think it's great. It's fine. Like, absolutely, have him as champion and have him win matches like this and go on a run and do what has made him popular. I just don't like it.
I hear you. Listen, you don't have to tell me twice. I get it. I'm right there with you. That said, I thought the ending stretches to this match, you felt his fire. You felt him taking it seriously. You felt, and you got to tip your cap to Acker because I thought he did an outstanding job as well. Yeah. Was it too long? Could we have done without the first 10 minutes? Probably. Probably. But I think by the end, I was kind of like, oh, this is turning into something good. And by the end, I was into it. I was into it. And I guess, not that anybody had any doubts, but, you know, it's moments like that where I kind of get a little bit more angry in the sense of, okay, we know you can fucking do it. Now you're just choosing not to do it. Here's proof of concept. So, yeah.
But at this point, Damon, right, his fans are expecting the quirkiness and the silliness. So it doesn't make sense for him to drop all of that and suddenly become serious Bushido wrestler just because I want him to do that. That's not what the character is, and that's not what's earned him this spot and his fan base and his popularity. So
I hear you.
Parts of this match were good, absolutely. I liked the Akira Tajiri pants. They were nice. Lots of tributes there. I thought there was a very decent near fall. Good drama with that ground tarantula where I thought Yo was about to submit there, and there was a couple of good near falls with the fireball, the running knee attack. So, yeah, it did get good at the end, but I don't know. I just, the 26 minutes was too long for my fucked attention span, but other opinions are available.
No, I hear you. Like I said, if we didn't have the first 10, I think we would be even... I'm pretty glowing on the match. I think it was really good. Again, if you hit the fast forward button past the first 10 minutes, and then it got down to business.
Okay, so that was that show. Then we also had a show that was taking place on Tuesday, July 7th, also at Coracle Hall. This is Tiger Mask retirement match. I'm just going to skip straight to the Tiger Mask stuff because please. I feel that there's not really much else worth commenting on. So the first was a 5-minute time limit match, retirement match one, which is Tiger Mask against Dynamite Kid Tom Billington, which went to a 5-minute draw. And then the seventh match was another 5-minute limit retirement match two, which was Tiger Mask against Black Tiger 4, aka Rocky Romero, which went to a 5-minute time limit draw, but then Rocky attacked him after the bell and said he wants another 5 minutes, and then Tiger Mask was able to get the win with the Tiger Suplex in fairly short order and go out as a winner, triumphant. He's not putting anybody over. Fuck that.
Yeah, that's true. That finish was... almost, I mean, little differences, mind you, but very similar to that of what they did in Trenton with Takeshita and where, you know, Takeshita wins the title from ELP, it was, right? They had the time limit draw, and then they go to extra five. Rocky loves that. That's Rocky's go-to finish. I like this a lot. I'm sorry. I really did. I thought, they do the 5-minute exhibitions a lot. I get it. And a lot of times I'm like, I would have loved to have just seen a match. But I think everything involved from the first five with Billington, you know, I was happy they pulled that off. I really was. The Black Tiger stuff, I was happy they pulled it off. The ceremony at the end, I enjoyed thoroughly. I don't know. It's New Japan does these things really well. I don't think they're over the top. I think they're fitting for the individual. They honor them well. They let them go out with grace. We're not going to sit here and talk about match quality. We're not going to sit here and talk about stars or anything nonsense like that. I think if you followed this product and you know the history of what that mask might represent, and you can say, well, the luster is off to shine, and it's not what it once was, and all that stuff. I don't know. I felt it. I thought it was well done, and I think New Japan deserves some flowers in the way that it was handled.
Yeah, agreed. We have a couple of questions on this. So Troy says, following Kazuchika Okada retiring Hiroshi Tanahashi and Tommy Billington / Rocky Romero retiring Tiger Mask 4, which AEW wrestler do you want to retire Hiroshi Tenzan this August?
I mean, they got a very rich and robust roster to be able to do that. I don't even.
Paul White, rich, Big Show.
Yeah, you want the Big Show to come out? All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to think of if there's anybody else that I can think of that I would be super duper thrilled with. And I really can't think of anybody on that roster. So, yeah, great. Wheel out the Big Show. Let's do it.
Derek said, is there anyone you would like to see pick up the mantle of Tiger Mask? And do you think there is any shot at seeing Dynamite Kid in a Best of the Super Juniors?
Great question. I would have liked to have seen it this year. I think there is a chance. I don't think it's a great chance, but I think there's definitely a chance. And no, I don't know. I don't think here's the thing. I think they always have it in their back pocket that they can have somebody be Tiger Mask. The problem is this. If you are a pro wrestler, do you want to be Tiger Mask?
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. If you were, you know, a young lion and you're making your way up in the company and they said, right, how about you just wear this mask and be Tiger Mask? I'd be offended. I'd be like, what? You don't want to see my lovely handsome face and my lovely name?
Yeah. I don't know. As much as I sat here and I said, oh, you know, it was great what they did. And they honored the idea of Tiger Mask and all that stuff. Like, do we need to see Tiger Mask again? You know, in this form? And I'll also say, would it have the same connection with this generation of fans? I don't know. I honestly would prefer not. And if you were going to do that, I wouldn't do that with any of the guys that are currently here. I would keep it in my pocket and wait and see. I wouldn't rush it by any stretch of the imagination.
Someone really, really ugly.
Yeah, somebody really. No, I mean, again, I think if you, just like you would, you know, laid out, if you're a young wrestler and you're trying to make a name for yourself, I don't know if I would really want to do that. So, I hold on to it. Hold on to it. You don't have to do it immediately. You can do it down the road, but I'm in no rush to see it again.
All right. Well, a preview. Saturday show, so July 11th, G1 Climax 36 in the Now Arena, Hoffman Estates, Illinois.
Yeah.
Tickets, not selling too good.
No?
Last I heard.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not that interested in the ticket discussion. We can have that discussion afterwards and have the post-mortem then, but I'm more interested in talking about the matches. So the first match in the B block, what a way to start. Aaron Wolf versus Henare.
Yeah. Yeah, we're starting right out of the gate, right? And you don't think that... I know this is, you know, the Aaron Wolf show. Don't think that Henare doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. And don't think that maniac isn't opposed to hit me as hard as you can in the face. Right?
Yes, I think Henare is a guy who understands... Again, I'm just purely speculation here, but I think... he understands the value that Aaron Wolf is bringing to the company. And he is going to just die trying to make Aaron Wolf look like a star.
Yeah. I mean, and again, you want to start the tournament off on a good foot. You want to get the crowd into it. You want like this is a good spot. Opening match. Everyone, you know, nobody's burned out. Everyone is raring to go. Everyone's got a beer or two in them. We're ready to fucking roll. Having these two beefy boys come out and beat the shit out of each other. Yes, absolutely. And then some. Both. Again, maybe not both, but you know Hinari's got a chip on his shoulder. And you know he's going to go out there and it's going. We're going to hear some meat slapping, my friend. I think this is going to be a great way to kick it off. Outstanding. And again, let's see what Aaron Wolf's got. This is going to be a nice little test. I'm ready for this one.
I think one of the things that Aaron Wolf is struggling with at the moment is the fact that he is a real life elite prize fighter. And he probably is fully aware of the fact that if he's not careful, he could seriously hurt the people that he's in the ring with.
Right.
So I think he is kind of pulling his punches, so to speak. I feel he's kind of working a little bit light just because he wants to obviously hurt his co-workers, which is understandable. But I think if there is anyone on this roster to get him out of that mentality and be like, no, you are coming out here, you are going to fucking hit me and as hard as you can. Don't worry about hurting me. Henare is the guy. And I think he will absolutely understand the assignment here. And yeah, I'm excited to, I just want to see Aaron Wolf let loose here. Do you think it is essential for Aaron Wolf to win this opening match? Because I feel, yes.
Yes.
I mean, yes. I think especially if Aaron Wolf is going to be the big star in the company that they need him to be, then I feel that he needs to make a good impression with the US audience. You know, this is his first match outside of Japan, and I think they will want to make him look like a big deal.
I'm with you. I think you can do that without him having to win. I will say this, that if that is your end goal, which rightfully New Japan it should be, that is probably the most direct path. But I don't think it's necessary that he does. I don't know. I don't know if he does absolutely has to do it. I don't even know if he will do it. I think what people are looking for is, can he hang? Can he go? And can he compete with guys in that ring and make it compelling and make it fun and make it so that we see something in the guy? I think if we can do that, like if we can walk, like truth be told, I don't care who wins or loses. Like to me, that's irrelevant. To me, it's when the bell rings, are we looking at each other like, yes, here we go. You know, I think that's the key. Like that'll make up for any wins and losses. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, you know, I think you've talked me around. Actually, I think if they go out and have a killer match, then people are not going to be talking about the result, are they? They're not interested in who wins or loses. They just want to see, does this guy have it? So,
correct.
Yeah, very much looking forward to that one. Second match then in the A block is Shingo Takagi versus Jake Lee. I feel that Shingo is a guy that the American fans really like. So I'm wondering if they might just throw him a bone here and you know, make the crowd happy and be like, you like Shingo? Okay, yeah, here we go. Shingo Takagi wins a match and everyone goes, yay.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he didn't, to be honest with you. Just here. I definitely have my reservations. If Jake Lee's going to find that extra level, I would hope it would be here to kick off G1. If this is shit, boy, we're in for a long fucking haul with Jake Lee. Like, if you can't have at least a match where, okay, that was good, with Shingo, we have massive problems. I would say of the entire show, this is where I'm kind of on the fence of, how good is Shingo? How is he going to pull this fucking rabbit out of his hat? Because Jake Lee, I got no fucking time for. I think Jake Lee might be above Yo in my I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I noticed in Jake Lee's last match, was it against ELP? Was that the kind of no DQ gimmick match they had?
I think so.
Remembering that?
Yeah.
He didn't take many bumps at all.
No.
So that's going to be something to keep an eye out here. Is he actually able to bump? Like, what kind of physical state is Jake Lee in going into this tournament? So
Why is he in
like
it?
Like you, my expectations are not particularly high. I'm already kind of washing my hands of Jake Lee, and I'm I don't have high hopes for him in this tournament.
No, neither do I. And again, okay, so you think of Shingo matches, like you need to be able to bump. you really do. Trust me, I'm just as worried as you are. That might be, let me check on England.
Okay, third match then, Oscar versus Ren Narita in the B block. I said it before, this is going to be ouchy, ouchy. He's hurting my leg. I don't know. I feel like I just feel Ren is going to win this. They will want to establish him as a threat, and he's kind of filling the spot that Evil vacated, even though he's not as good as Evil. I thought he had a pretty poor tournament last year, aside from the Zach match, which, you know, everyone has a great match against Zach because it's Zach. And right. I'm hoping for a better output from Ren, but not necessarily expecting it. But I do think he is probably going to be booked fairly strongly, and I think this is going to be a comfortable win for him here.
By any chance, would you bet me one British pound sterling? Will there be no interference in this match?
Damon, the fourth match is Yuta Ice versus Great O'Khan. So the fact that they have put the knockout guys back to back does make me wonder, now that you've mentioned that, about some sort of Heyman special situation. But do I think there's going to be interference? Yes, I do. I do think there will be interference. I think lots of House of Torture guys are going to come out, and I think Yuta Ice is going to come out and try to even the score. Yes, that is exactly what's going to happen.
And then it's a tag match, right? And that'll turn into a one tag.
Declare an impromptu tag match, yeah.
Great. Fuck me. Yeah, I think there will be interference. And again, a little smoke and mirrors to kind of get us through where we need to be. So, I think that would be my prediction of, interference galore.
Then the fourth match is in the A block, Yuta Ice with his debut G1 match against Great O'Khan. Again, Great O'Khan is a guy who I don't have particularly high expectations. I'll be interested to see if he's got his working boots on here. Is he going to go
best
to the
G1? Best G1 in the past 5 years, Joel.
Is he going to go to the same efforts that other people on this roster have done to make Yuta Ice look good? I will believe it when I see it. If I had to choose one or the other, is he going to bump like a madman and make Yuta Ice look great, or is he going to absolutely dog it? Then it's probably going to be.
I have no idea. I trust me. Now, again, if there's any glimmer of hope, one, it is Yuta Ice's first G1 match, so I'm sure he'll want to go out there and impress. And two, Great O'Khan does love the U.S. Maybe he hits a strip club the night before. He gets all his horniness out of him, and he's ready, raring to go. I don't know. Let's put it this way: I don't trust it. I'd be curious to see where this lands on enjoyable scale. I would be stupid to sit here and say, this will be great. Both guys will have their working shoes on. Like, again, if we're looking at history, I don't see it.
Have we ever seen a great match where we've said at the end of it, wow, he made his opponent look brilliant there?
No.
What a selfless performance.
No. No, let alone a 5-page blog, I couldn't write a paragraph. Sorry. We see things differently. So, I don't know. And the thing about it is that I truly believe everybody on that roster, if they once again get the tap on the shoulder, they can deliver. Deliver. I'll be the first person to fucking say I was wrong. I don't think I'm going to be saying that, but Okay, fingers crossed. Make me wrong.
Fifth match is Shota Umino versus Zack Sabre Jr. in the B block. Now, this is a bit surprising. It's a big match. They've got great chemistry. They've got a really good catalogue of matches between them. Obviously, this was a Wrestle Kingdom main event a couple of years ago. But this is the fifth match. The fact that this is not higher up the card is a surprise to me. I don't know if this is kind of like a sort of pre-intermission spot that they are kind of penciling this in to be a big one, but they've put some other matches as a buffer between that and stuff coming later on in the card. Like the match following this is Goto versus Sanada. I don't know. It seems like a strange choice in terms of card placement.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think it would be higher. I don't have a great answer as to why it's placed there. And again, maybe it's just pacing the show, and they felt like that would be the spot to do it in. I think the match will be very good. I'm excited for it, actually. I can't believe they've wrestled so many singles matches together, though. That's pretty amazing. It should be very good. I think Zach always delivers. I'm not worried about him. I'm not even worried about Shota. We're getting a Wrestle Kingdom main event in Hoffman Estates. I can't shit on that. I think it'll be one of the better matches of the night.
Yeah, I feel the assignment here, not just in this match, but in the tournament, is to get Shota over. And if anyone is going to be good at doing that, it's going to be Zack Sabre Jr. So I'm very interested to see how that match has worked. And I don't know, do you think the winner is significant? Do you think that it's important for Shota to win this in front of the American fans to, you know, get his tournament off on the right foot and establish him as a serious contender by beating a former G1 winner and former world champion in Zach?
I think it would help. Yeah. I think he does get a win here. I really do. Because for all the reasons that you just mentioned, like, it's okay if Zach loses, like, because Zach will get wins and he'll be in the mix and no worries there. But if anybody is strong enough to put him over, it's Zach, and put him over in a strong way. So it wouldn't hurt to have him get that win right out of the gate, you know, shock a couple people, and wake up an American audience that, you know, I'm not going to say it's cold on him, but, you know, needs a little waking up to the fact that, you know, this guy, we're counting on you. We need you to be a guy. So, yeah, I say he wins, and I think the match will be great.
Sixth match, as I mentioned before, in the A block, it's Hiroki Goto against Sanada. I'm interested to hear in the reception that Goto gets, because I still think he's a bit of a commodity in New Japan. Obviously, he's a former world champion fairly recently. He's in the Street Fighter movie. And he's not really... he wasn't in the G1 last year, lest we forget. So he's returning to the G1. And it feels like he's not really had any showcase singles matches since the title run. It feels like he's kind of been kept away from things almost. So I'll be interested to see how the American fans react to him. Like, do they treat him like a former world champion? Will they be excited to see him? Are they going to be cheering for him? And also, we talked about Sanada before, like a few weeks ago, and what his presentation is going to be like during the tournament. Is it going to be just House of Torture guy number three, where there's, you know, lots of interference and cheating? Or is he going to be doing something a bit different? I think in the press conference today, he said that he was going to be taking it seriously and not going to be doing all the shenanigans. So I'm curious to see what this match looks like. I don't have particularly high hopes for it, but I think there are a few variables there that at least make it interesting to me going into it.
Yeah, I'll address a couple of the points. One, the good news is, while it might not be this raucous, full house, packed arena, the people that are going to be there are diehards. You know what I mean? Like, so I think Goto is going to get a strong reaction and a strong reception. Sanada, quite honestly, when him saying, I'm going to take this seriously, I'm going to, you know, it came out last year, you know, in a goofy outfit, and everybody kind of has been talking about my entrance with the multiple versions of Sonata. And he says he's going to take it seriously. Screams to me that he's not taking it seriously. Like he's going to come out in a fucking clown suit.
literal clown car.
Yep, yep. And all the other Sonatas coming out of the car, you know. Look, these guys have wrestled many times before. These guys know the deal. I'm hoping they pull a rabbit out of their hats. And when I say pull a rabbit out of their hat, I mean Sonata pulling a rabbit out of his hat. And they have a really solid match. I think Goto is excited. I think Goto has a chip on his shoulder being back in it. So this has the potential to be a dark horse match of the night. I'm going to say that. Again, the variable is Sonata. And what version of Sonata do we get at Hoffman Estates? I don't know. I once again, I just don't have confidence. Could this match be good? Yes. I think good is the baseline. Good is the starting point. Can they elevate it? Again, this is close to the top here. I instead of his fucking big goofy clown shoes, put on your working boots, dude. Give me that. And again, he's coming off an injury. He's coming off of everything. Like, there's just so many fucking things that you're just like, can we have the good thing? I don't know. I wish I could sit here and be confident and say, yep, it'll be great. It could be great. And it could also be like fart in church. We'll see.
Seventh match is the B Block tournament match with Yuya Uemura against Callum Newman. So a rematch of the New Japan Cup final here.
Yeah.
So obviously last time it was a glorious win for Callum Newman, becoming the youngest ever New Japan Cup champion. And I'm interested what you think should be the objective in this match here. Who do you think needs to win, or do you think this is just a case of going out and having a really good match?
This is Yuya's first G1. It is, right?
No, it's not. It's his third.
Jesus Christ. Wow. Boy. The potential is there to have a great match. Don't get me wrong. I don't, like, if you put a gun to my head and said who needs it more, I would say Yuya. But I feel like this is a Callum night. This also could be match of the night. The positioning, they're going to give it time.
I was going to say the opposite, actually. I think this is the seventh match out of nine. So I think this is going to be significantly shorter than the New Japan Cup final they had. I think so. And I was going to speculate. Well, actually, how long was that match? That's a good thing that I should look up here. Because I was going to say it could be in a situation where in being required to be briefer, that they might actually have a, not a better match, but like a different kind of match, maybe like a more dynamic match, more, I don't know, kind of trim the fat a bit.
Yeah.
If you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I do.
Less of the melodrama and
kind they're of not giving them, you don't think they're giving them less than 20 minutes, do you?
I'm just checking how long the final lasted. Okay, so the final was 25 minutes and 52 seconds.
Okay. So we'll call it 26. Obviously,
there is a 30-minute time limit on this.
Right.
As it is the G1 climax, but I think it goes less than that. I think this does, like, I don't know, maybe 15?
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we're talking 5 minutes. It's not, you know, earth shattering. I don't know. I think they go 20. It does have the potential to be really good, though. Really does. Do you think it matters who wins or loses?
I would like to see them get behind Yuya. And I know, like, he had his run to the New Japan Cup final but I want to see
the win back.
A sustained push. Yeah, I think he gets his win back here. Yeah.
Okay. I'm down. I think here's what I mean, in a rather selfish fashion. And again, I'm saying Callum Newman's not a New Japan guy. He 100% is. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see New Japan born and bred guys getting wins to establish them in a positive light to the fans that are there. Even though the fans that are going to be there are the hardcore of the hardcores, I would think. I still would like to see that opening night. I've said this 7 times, but I think a lot of people have this circled as match of the night. Like if they're looking for like anything other than the main event, like this has potential to be really fucking good.
8th match is a block tournament match. Oleg Bolton versus Jorge Oiwa. Okay, really interesting choice for a semi-main event. And I love it. I like the fact that they're putting two relatively young guys here, guys with a point to prove. And the fact that this is the penultimate match, the semi-main event, if you like, suggests to me that they are going to give it time. And I'm excited for this one. I'm just analyzing this, thinking what needs to happen in this match, what needs to be achieved in front of this American crowd, because it's a unique opportunity there. And it's almost like you've got two opening nights to the G1, haven't you? There's this show, which almost feels separate from the tournament itself. And it feels like there's a second opening night when they do have the kickoff show. When is it exactly? I feel that's important. I should look that up.
It's like a week, isn't it?
A week later. Yeah, a week later in Hokkaido.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be nice to have it be something that sticks in people's minds to say, okay, I can't wait for this week to get over because I can't wait for night two. That is my, and like that would be the most ideal scenario in my mind. Yeah, they are going to give it time. And, you know, this has the potential to be, I mean, I don't expect you to go fucking looking it up, but, you know, it's not like either of these guys have, you know, 25-minute matches or a ton of them under their belts. That's for fucking sure. So there is a part of me that while they could give it lots and lots of time just on the positioning of the card, they might not. They might give Newman and Yuya the time and cool down the crowd a little bit with this one. Again, it still could be great. I guarantee you we'll see a suplex or two probably. And then we're rising back up for the main event. Yeah. Again, this is so interesting because there's so much unknown. Like, this is a big time spot for both of those guys.
It's like, a bold choice, isn't it? Like they could have really gone with, they could have done something like, I don't know, Shingo against Goto or Zach versus someone, like with guys who are established entities and commodities for this US crowd. But no, they've gone with two guys who I don't know if they've worked in the States before. So they've picked two Alton young up and coming guys.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Oiwa. Yeah. No, Oiwa definitely has as well. Yeah. Cause I remember he wrestled Gabe Kidd, didn't he, for the strong title at some point. But, my point stands that this is a statement of intent to pick two guys who, you know, are not established commodities in the New Japan roster and put them in a big spot like this and say, right, these are two guys you need to pay attention to.
Right. Right. You know, New Japan usually doesn't do what I described of, all right, let's cool down the crowd for the main event. Like when we get into this business end of the show, the graph is shooting up. It's not they're not booking shit to cool down a crowd. Yeah, interesting spot. Interesting fucking spot. You think both those guys have a chip on their shoulder to go out there and fucking deliver. Boy, this is pretty great. This is pretty great. Because the upside of this, Joel, is people talking about this and people being like, whoa, you got to fucking see that match. And honestly, the downside is good match, They got experience. They have more in the tank. And imagine what they'll be in 2 or 3 years. Like that's to me, that's the downside, which I think is a very positive thing to begin with. But boy, if they fucking knock the ball out of the park, that would be incredibly great. Beat the shit out of each other.
And Tarzan Boy says, what are your expectations for Oiwa's booking in the G1?
Yeah. I don't know. And that's kind of what I opened up with this show. I don't know. Again, if we're just going by history of the past year or year and a half, you would think he's looking at the lights more often than not. Somebody's got to be looking at the lights more often than not. He might be that guy, but New Japan's weird, man. They might be like, oh, he goes on this magical run. And they always do that. They do always do the people that you think, oh, well, Christ almighty, they're not even making the semis. They go on this heater for like four matches. You know, they're winning three out of four or even four. There's always that. So that is something to take into consideration. I think at the end of the day, though, he's losing more than he's winning. Somebody has to.
Yeah. I don't know. It's very, I'm not ready mentally to start doing my pick-ems yet and start giving my bold predictions about who's going to do what. These are two guys who I feel are both ripe for getting a push and to be established as significant players in the heavyweight division. But until it happens, it hasn't happened yet. If you know what I mean, there have been guys, it just seems that the pattern with the glacial booking of New Japan, that it would take about 4 years of me saying, oh, this is this guy's year. This is the year he's going to get pushed and get to the final before it actually happens. So whilst I think there is a strong case to be made for both these guys going deep in the tournament, I don't think it will happen, but I'll believe it when I see it, basically.
Right. It's hard to put money down on it. Yeah. But here's the positive, Joel. Under that thinking, this is Great Okan's year. Right? Come on, let's go.
Great Okan is going on a run. Goki Goa. The main event here, the ninth match, is in the A block, Konosuke Takeshita versus Yota Tsuji. So another Wrestle Kingdom, well, no, this wasn't a Wrestle Kingdom main event, was it? A Wrestle Kingdom semi-main event rematch here. Again, what needs to happen here? Is this a match where you are solidifying Yota Tsuji as your top guy in the tournament? He is your world champion. Is this where he goes out and proves a point to the American fans to show his value and say, yeah, I'm the ace of this company now? Or is this a point where Takeshita gets his win back and possibly gets another crack at the title somewhere in the autumn? How do you see this one going?
Joel, this is Tony Khan turf, you know.
Yes.
I mean, getting the win back, I think, is important.
The optics of having this this big New Japan show in the States and having an AEW guy closing the show as the winner in the main event.
I mean, let's be honest here. Aside from the hardcores, he's the most famous TV star, turn on the TV guy in that building.
Yeah, but he doesn't work for New Japan.
He does work for New Japan.
Does he?
I mean, detail.
I'm curious, how do you think the American fans will react to him? Do you think they will treat him as like, oh, this is New Japan star Takeshita? Like, are they going to cheer for him like everyone else? Like, I'm curious as to see if there's going to be any difference.
We'll get one of the largest ovations of the night.
Yeah, probably.
And it's hard for me to sit here and justify him not winning. Even though for the good of the company, you would absolutely want to do that. Just all the things outlined above. I'm not saying Tony Khan sitting there with a fucking phone in his hand saying, I don't want to see him, you know, looking at the lights. But I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if Tony Khan's like, well, you got him at Wrestle Kingdom, but now we're here in the States. And guess what? We're running a show like the next month.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this was part of the deal,
right?
Going back to the booking of Wrestle Kingdom.
Could have been. Could have been. Don't know for sure, but could have been. I just don't know how you close this show without him being. And again, he works in AEW a lot. You know, he's technically both.
He's TV champion, Damon.
And the TV champion. That prestigious TV gold.
Title versus title.
Let's go. Again, aside from, well, it would help New Japan Pro Wrestling establish stars. Give me the reason why Takeshita looks at the lights.
Yeah, I know. My only reason would be that the necessity to solidify Yota Tsuji as the top guy in the company.
Look, again, I'm with you. I just don't see it happen. I just don't. And that doesn't diminish the light of this match of, you know, this is closing night one of G1, big time spot, big spotlight. They're going to give them time. Both guys can fucking go. They'll deliver. I mean, if we're looking at winners and losers, I can't see Takeshita losing twice. You know, Dome's one thing. That's a big show of the year. This one, is this the big show of the year for New Japan Pro Wrestling? I don't know.
You excited?
Oh, I am. Yeah, I am. I think the show is going to be really fun. Again, I'm excited for the, just what do you got up your sleeve, guys? You know, who's going to come out star of the night? Who's going to come out getting people talking? Again, it's G1, and as much as people have turned their back on this product, and again, in a lot of cases, rightfully so, in some cases, it's like, okay, were you really ever a fan? People parachute in for G1. So to get off on a good foot, you're in front of, it might not be the biggest crowd, but it'll be, we're there for it. You know what I mean? We're there for it. We know what this is. So I hope they deliver. A lot of guys, it's, and you know, nobody there is it make or break, but we could have career defining moments for some of these guys, and I'm there for it. Like go kids. 'Cause you know, we need you. we need it more than, I can't say more than they would need it, but we need it just as bad. Become a star. As Jim Ross would say, make yourself a star. Boy, that's the worst JR imitation. I don't even know what that was. You know what I'm trying to say. Kid. Yeah, make yourself a star. My barbecue sauce. All right. There you go. There's G1. For those of you traveling, I'll see you there. For those of you not, you'll have a $10 tier where you'll get, it'll be like you're right there with us, and you don't have to leave your couch. How about that? How great is that? Technology. I cannot believe I'm doing this, but I'm doing it. I committed to
get your fucking wallets out now. Do yes. It now.
I know. Right. You'll see me. Oh, jeez Louise. Yeah, you get to see me be very uncomfortable in front of the camera. It'd be great. You'll love it just for that. All right. Anything else on the docket?
No. Bye, everyone.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.